Second hour DDC here on this Wednesday. Hope everybody's having a good day. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. And our very special guest. By the way, Adam Kaplan at noon. No.
Mike Golic Jr.
Mike Golic Jr., yes. This helps if I look at the grid. Thank you, Elijah. Mike Golic Jr. I mean, they're the same. No, they're not. Not at all. He'll join us at noon, 1 o'clock, Richard Deitch. But our next guest, a familiar face, a familiar name, a familiar voice, no longer in Nashville, but in Nashville right now. His name, Ryan Porth. He's got his Dusty Baker in Dusty I Trust shirt on. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
That's actually still in Chicago.
Yeah.
I went looking for that seriously this morning to wear it in here. I'm like, you know what? I think that I put that in the drawer because I have worn it around the house.
Have you really?
In Chicago. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With a toothpick in my mouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Failing to win a World Series. That's what I've been doing up in Chicago. Uh-huh.
I noticed you're not wearing any red swag.
I wore the red swag yesterday for
big win.
For Robbie and Joe.
They're in double digits in wins now.
I am so elated that they won last night.
Yeah. I'm thinking about going to a game soon. Do you think I can get tickets? Do you think they're available, right?
Sections are available
Cincinnati.
The stadium
is available.
But you will not see any fans with trash bags over their heads because the owners do not want their fans in Great American Small Park to wear trash bags over their heads.
Yes.
So – the Reds are in Chicago in late June. I am seriously considering buying a ticket or two tickets right around the Reds dugout
and wearing
a trash bag.
Do it. You'll get on TV.
I know I will.
You'll get on TV. How are things at 670 The Score?
Things are great. It's been a whirlwind 5 months. It's flown by. You know, new job, new city. Becoming a dad.
Mm-hmm. Some things going on.
Been going back and forth between Chicago and Nashville, and we're in our last leg of being Nashville residents. We're moving for good up on Memorial Day weekend on that Saturday. So it's a bittersweet next 10 days, knowing, you know, I've been here for the last 20 years and going up to Chicago for good. We found a house up there. In the Naperville area. Mm. So that is the biggest suburb of Chicago, the third largest city in Illinois.
Mm.
So we'll be living there, and I'll still be living the train life going to and from downtown Chicago that I have been doing the last handful of months, which, again, this whole last 5 months has just been a complete whirlwind, a huge adjustment. You know, instead of a 20-minute car ride into work to here like normal, it's – you know, an hour 20 commute between leaving the door, you know, walking out the door, getting to the train station, train downtown, shuttle from the train station to the Prudential Building.
Yeah.
So
welcome to big
city
life. But
it's been worth it. It's been great. Loving it.
Yeah. Cool. Your wife is fascinated with Joel Quenneville. She definitely is a big fan of Quenneville.
She is a big fan of yours and Quenneville.
Is Q getting back in the mix?
I don't know what the Blackhawks are doing with really anything up there. I mean, the fan base has mostly checked out on that team, especially, you know, since everything percolated last calendar year with the off-ice stuff. Then they were slowly coming back, and then Rocky Wirtz attacks the media and the fans. And that, you know, if they took two steps forward, they took four steps back. Just in that one town hall meeting alone. So the Blackhawks are just a tire fire up there. No, you know, 670 The Score, we don't even talk about the Chicago Blackhawks up there unless Rocky Wirtz is attacking media members. The building, it obviously isn't even, you know, 80% full most nights. You know, so it's kind of drifting back towards what it was pre-Taves and Kane.
Mm.
They better get this next coaching hire right, and you know the roster, it's getting older. So if they don't take another step forward here in the next couple of years, it's going to get rotten up there with the Hawks.
Well, I mean, who are they realistically looking at? Barry's not going to Chicago.
No,
he's not going.
That was a small small percentage of talk the day after he got fired by the Islanders of, should the Blackhawks pursue Trotz? And I'm like, well, you know, the Blackhawks should pursue Trotz, but Trotz, I highly doubt, is going to pursue Chicago.
He's interviewed Winnipeg, and I suspect he's going to be in the mix in Vegas.
He makes too much sense in Vegas.
Yep. Honestly, that to me is like the perfect landing spot. So if you're looking at proven guys,
probably a retread of some sort.
Torts in the mix.
You know, he would be an interesting character. I would be rooting for that because that would be entertainment.
Yeah.
For media purposes. Mm-hmm. I think they either go the retread route or a brand new head coach and just rolling the dice like they did with Colleton, and that failed miserably.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Typically, when you try that and it fails, you kind of revert back to another way.
But what retread worth his salt is going to want to go to Chicago right now? Not only with the state of the roster, but with all the off-ice baggage as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So you haven't been gone that long, and you are very, very, very familiar with the situation here. Predators are talking tomorrow for the first time since the series ended.
24 hours from now.
Yep. We will carry that press conference live. Yes, 24 hours from now. In fact, they'll be 9 minutes into that presser this time tomorrow, and we'll be airing it on this show. So what do you think, if you were there, if you were in attendance, and you were asking a couple of questions, you get first dibs.
Mm-hmm.
What's your first question? What are you asking?
What is the direction if you don't sign Philip Forsberg? That's what I want to know. Because if they re-sign him, no matter what the term and the dollar amount is, if they re-sign him, I think you would also see them go out and get another maybe top four defenseman or at least someone that you can rely on for a lot of minutes. I made the case yesterday with Robbie and Joe that kind of taking the St. Louis Blues route at forward this past offseason where they made a shrewd trade to go get Pavel Buchnevich, and he goes in there, scores 30 goals. He's on their top line. He's been fantastic there. But that wasn't a huge move at the time. It was an interesting one,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't one that you thought was going to put the Blues over the top like it has contributed to them taking a step forward after getting swept by Colorado in embarrassing fashion last year in round one. So I don't know if they go that route, you know, via trade or via free agent signing and find someone that isn't going to break the bank like Forsberg is going to. That would be kind of the route I would expect them to go if they re-sign Forsberg. I want to know, under the situation that Forsberg leaves, because that feels very real at the moment, that come
so
free agency.
When you say that, what's your odds right now that he stays?
I think it's 50-50
okay,
at
that's
best
what I was gonna ask you.
That he stays.
You think it's 50-50 at best?
Right. I mean, this is Forsberg's last chance to hit it big with this contract. I mean, that is reality.
And what's big?
I mean, on the open market, he could probably get over $9 million, right?
Well, see, that is, to me, an interesting question. Because who are the players that make $9 million?
Well, there's a short list, but we all know the prices year after year just keep going up.
But the cap doesn't, though. You're in a flat cap situation. There are a couple teams that could do that, but we just talked about one of them, and that's L.A. They got the cap space to do it. But I just say to myself, is he a $9 million player? You might have to end up overpaying a little bit, but you've got the eighth year to do that. So I still think it's worth haggling for a little while longer here.
I mean,
but I just don't know that he's going to get up over $9 million for a team with the kind of player that he's been.
I mean, this past season, he played like a $9 million player for most of it.
Yes, he did.
But that hasn't been his track record in every single season up until this one, which we've all seen, especially in this city, contract years. You know, the first one that comes to mind for this city is Albert Haynesworth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back-to-back contract years, he had never been better. Goes out, breaks the bank, and then, you know, he was never the same after that. Not saying that would happen with Philip Forsberg, but we all know that players tend to do better in their contract year because they know they're going to get paid. And Forsberg, I think, elevated his price at least $1 million, maybe closer to $2 million on the open market with the way he played this year,
but
scoring over 40 goals.
So let's say it is $9 million. 7 times 9 is $63 million. 8 times 8 is $64 million. So the Predators still have, they have the eighth year. So if it is $9 million, the Predators ought to easily be able to beat that.
Well, they've got the eighth year until July 13th.
Yeah.
And then they don't.
And it's May whatever now.
What's You've got
May
18th? Months.
You got 2 months.
Right. But what Ryan's saying, if what if that is his mentality is this is my contract that sets me up for life. If that's the mentality, don't you have to see the market? Don't you have to go to the market to see?
But you lose the eighth year.
I understand.
If you're Philip, it works both ways,
agreed.
Right? The Predators lose the eighth year, but he loses the eighth year.
True. Yes.
And if it's 8.5, then it's what you and Robbie were saying.
68 million.
Right.
So you got to go 9.5 million just to get to 66.5. You got to go up over. You got to go closer to 10 million. 7 times 10 would be 70 million. So you got to go between 9.5 and 10 to beat the Predators 8 times 8. Everybody seems to say the same thing. If you just start doing these math things, just have 8.8 and let's be done with it. Let's go. What are we waiting on?
If he doesn't come back, I think it says one of two things or a combination of both. Either the Predators are lowballing him through this negotiation, or he doesn't like the direction of this franchise, whatever that direction is. Because I think the last 2 years we've been wondering what is the direction. And I would be curious to know inside Philip Forsberg's head what he thinks the direction is.
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable with your daughter, with Uncle Robbie and Elijah?
I think so.
To stay another segment?
I think so. Elijah's giving the thumbs up, I think she's not fussy behind the glass.
Do you need to maybe check on her during the break?
I'll check on her during
the
break.
I think she's good. She's well-behaved.
Yeah.
I think we'll do another segment.
Okay.
Ryan Porth, 670 The Score in Chicago with us here on his Nashville visit with daughter in tow. All right, we'll come back. More DDC next. Hey, anybody want to go to the Ryman tomorrow? George Thorogood and the Destroyers tomorrow. Pair of tickets right now. Caller 8, 615-737-1025. That is our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That just happened. A pair of tickets to see George Thorogood and the Destroyers at the Ryman tomorrow. Caller 8, go. Ryan Porth in studio with us here at the Hillside Medical Game Studio. It's pretty interesting. You talk at 670 The Score. You guys carry the Cubs, but you say everybody's talking about the White Sox. That's
they are a soap opera topic in Chicago right now. Like we talk about the Bears ad nauseum up there, as you would expect. The Justin Fields talk up there is reminiscent to me as Marcus Mariota early in his career of how are the Bears going to get more around him? Is Justin Fields going to take that next step? He is going through a coaching change, another OC change. So, like, I'm getting PTSD from those first couple of years of Mariota with all the Justin Fields talk up there. But lately, in the last month and a half, I mean, Tony La Russa and the Chicago White Sox have been the number one topic up there because of the managerial decisions that he's making, because of the team underperforming. You know, you've got a star-laden lineup. Now, some of it has been riddled by injuries. You know, Eloy Jimenez has been hurt. Lance Lynn has been hurt. Lucas Giolito has been on the IL a couple of times this year. And, the front office has been hesitant to improve the roster around the current players. And that has been a huge storyline up there. But mostly it's been Tony La Russa. And the fact that late game situations, he is making some real head scratching decisions, and the White Sox fan base is fed up with him. They want him fired, but he's got the longest leash ever because of his relationship with Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the White Sox. So it's every night there's something with the White Sox.
Keith on our text line would like Willie to update you, Ryan, on the Preds' plan. So he thinks that you're out of touch, and Willie can give you the plan.
I think Ryan has a good sense of the Preds' plan. It's a competitive transition.
It's a fun joke on our show. So Ryan doesn't get that. So, but
well, that was
Keith. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Well done,
Ryan. If Ryan were listening last week, he would know exactly where that where that came from. Right there,
Willie's passion. There was a lot of passion last week.
I'm just simply saying there is a plan. It's a pretty clear plan. If you haven't paid attention, then that's one thing. Or if you disagree with the current plan, that's a whole nother thing. But there's been a pretty clear plan. But anyway.
I just wonder what the plan is if they don't bring back Philip Forsberg.
Well, yeah, no, I thought that was a good first question.
But that's that's absolutely a fair question because that has been the plan all along. Going back every week when we talk to David Boyle, he's not wavered. That is going to be interesting if they aren't announcing an extension for him or, you know, a new contract for him tomorrow. He's going to get asked that because they still have a lot of time, in my opinion, to negotiate and move on. I think it's pretty simple. When you start crunching all these things and we've looked at all the comparables and what it would take, to me, in that 8.5 range is the sweet spot.
Darren, would you do that? 8 years, 8.5 per for Forsberg? Because I know you've been vocal in the last year or two that you would like David Poyle to be done with the big contracts.
Yes. I definitely have said that. But I also know that I kind of feel like Forsberg is – Yossi was the exception to the rule. We know that.
Sure.
You have to be careful, but also you also know what he is. See, the problem in this situation is you know exactly what you have, and so that is a good problem to have, right? The biggest problem that you have bringing in somebody from the outside is what do you not know, right? What
sure.
What because you're not around them all the time. You truly know people when you're around them all the time, how they function at work, on and off the ice. The Predators know that through and through with Philip Forsberg, and I suspect, like we all do, because we've been around him for a long time, there are no issues. So typically, in this case, even if your number is, I don't know. I don't know what their hard number is. Let's just go with 8. Let's say David's hard number is 8.
8x8.
8x8. That's been a popular number
which beats any contract that somebody has to go over 9 per year to beat that for straight up dollars, not even including the cost of living adjustment where you keep more. So to me, that's what's happening here. I don't know this. To me, that's probably the issue, is the Predators are slow walking it because they would like to keep it closer to 8 than have to go into the 8.5 or 9.
But Ryan's asking me, we're going to go on the number, your number, 8.5.
8.5.
You're like, well, what's 500,000 amongst friends? Well, it's 500,000 times 8, so that's like another $4 million. That's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't answer it for me. I have to answer it, what is David Poyle? David Poyle cannot, because we all lived it, he cannot, Forsberg cannot walk for nothing. Especially with the... It's unstable right now with the fan base. There's a lot of people, as we have fielded lots and lots of calls and comments on our text line, saying it's time. And as I've said on the show for the last 2 weeks or 9 days, I'm pro David Poyle, but I also know that everything has a shelf life. I understand that. I mean, so everyone is entitled to their opinion, and if your opinion is it's time for a new voice, a new direction, or what have you, it's impossible, even though I'm pro David Poyle, to push back Ryan on that. But I also know there's no way in hell you're going to be able to please. If you think there's people that feel that way now, and then Forsberg walks for nothing, you can only imagine how loud that group gets.
The noise only gets louder.
It
won't quiet.
It gets really loud.
Yeah.
Right?
And you would have squandered the opportunity last offseason.
Right. It's almost unbearable.
Exactly. And you would have squandered the opportunity of last offseason getting, what, 3, 4, 5 assets in return for Philip Forsberg in a trade? And hasn't David Poyle been on record before in years gone by that he doesn't want to have the suitor situation happen again? And if it happens again, like you said, the noise would only get louder. And maybe a part of the fan base that has been Poyle backers
may switch.
Yeah.
They may shift.
Yeah.
And so to me, I can't answer like me. I have to answer it like him and say, if it really comes down to, you know, if you don't buckle, and maybe overpay a little bit, he's going to walk and you're going to lose him, you're going to have to buckle.
But it's a pickle, though, because what if they view Forsberg as someone over the 8 years that isn't going to, say, like halfway through the contract, isn't going to be worth the 8.5?
Yeah.
That's every 8-year contract, though.
Yep. True.
Sure.
Unless you're doing the Miro Heiskanen or one of those deals,
right,
where you're investing early before they actually
in a 22-year-old.
The outliers like Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews or anyone like that.
The no-brainers.
Right.
And those guys were locked up before age 27, what Phil is. But I would say almost every guy who signs a contract at 27, 28, which is generally the age that they hit this moment in their career, the Blues, they let Alex Pietrangelo go. Because I think part of that, and there was a no-trade thing in there, I think
just fine. And they replaced him with Justin Falk. And, you know, they haven't. Obviously,
allocated their assets and found a way to be really good still without Alex Pietrangelo. That's a really interesting thing. They have won the cup, and I think they got their hands full in this round here. But they've done a very good job, just showing you that there are ways around it. They didn't get anything for Pietrangelo. That's the weird part, the tough part. You don't get a compensatory pick at all when you lose a guy like that, like you do in baseball.
Yes.
And some other sports. So that's what stings. But you couldn't trade Pietrangelo at the trade deadline because St. Louis was trying to win. They're the defending champions at the time. The Predators were fighting. They were overachieving and had a really good vibe going and made the playoffs. They wouldn't have made the playoffs if they traded Philip Forsberg before the deadline. If that Andy Strickland thing were true and they were shopping him around, that wouldn't have gone over real well.
But in the same breath, Ryan, while I'm pro Philip Forsberg, I'm also not saying that you couldn't survive and you couldn't even thrive moving on in a different direction. The problem is I'm saying they won't be able to get out from underneath the noise if he walks for nothing, and it'll be unbearable.
It would take close to 12 months for that noise to go away if the Predators were to go to the playoffs next year without Forsberg and
something really make special some noise would have to happen.
Better than what they did last year against Carolina or certainly this year against Colorado.
Yep. Something special would have to happen.
But we all know, though, that there is a buyer beware with Philip Forsberg, or at least I feel that way. I am very hesitant about the $8.5 million per, knowing that he misses 15, 20 games per year. That's been the norm for him in the last 5 years. That we always knew that he had this 40-goal season in him. The talent was always there, but he never truly executed it until his contract year. Is he going to dip back to the 25 to 30 goal per season rate that he's been scoring at the last, you know, 5 years when we've all wanted more from him? And if he's going to dip back to that, I don't know if I can pay that kind of production, $8.5 million per, as tough of a pill as it would be to swallow to let him walk for nothing.
So then why would somebody pay him $9 million? They know everything that you just said.
Well, we know the open market gets bonkers. I mean, that's the thing.
Even with the flat cap.
Yes.
Because it only takes one. I get it. And there's a very small trickle of unrestricted free agents at his caliber. So I can see that. But I think you just laid out all the reasons why they are where they are right now. And to your point about you could have traded in the last offseason, he didn't have a good season last year. He was hurt a lot. What did he have?
He was.
13 goals last year?
I still think they could have gotten a pretty
not five good assets. Package.
Okay, maybe I exaggerated, but at least three, maybe four, right?
But okay, what's give me kind of a first round pick?
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay. And what?
A second and one or two promising prospects? Maybe not the upper echelon that you're going to see Corey Pronman put in like the top 10 or 20 of his list on The Athletic, but like one or two guys that you feel like could come in and at least contribute.
I feel pretty good about three assets.
Okay. All right.
But coming off of the year he had, I don't know if it's the primo. That would have been a tough time to do it. But then of course if he had a good year, it might have been easier to re-up him and get it done.
Ryan, good to see you.
Great to see you guys.
Good to see your daughter. Yeah. Back to dad duties.
Back to Mr. Mom.
And by the way, I had a great...
You never get back to dad duty. You're always on dad duty.
True. I was on dad duty during the break.
Well, but but he actually like clocked out for 2 segments, and then he's clocking back in as dad duties. I got a really funny text from Pete Weber. Would you like for me to read it?
Does it have any relation to potatoes?
No, it has nothing to do with potatoes.
That is the biggest surprise of the day.
I know. But do you want me to read it? No, I guess I can't.
Probably
not. It's an inside joke. It's funny, though. It's really funny.
You normally can't read text from Pete Weber on the air.
It was something to do with your wedding.
Oh, yeah. I know where that's going. Yeah. The answer is yes, Pete. And I'll leave it at that.
So you do know the text.
Yes.
Yes. Good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Congratulations, Doug Spear. Doug won the George Thurgood tickets. Go enjoy that show tomorrow night at the Ryman, and thanks for listening. We'll come back more DDC next. All right, so some action last night back here on the DDC. Mike Golic Jr. coming up at high noon. Richard Deitch at 1 o'clock. Saw the Tampa Bay Lightning. I said the Florida Panthers, and I'm like, oh, boy. They're going to choke this away, aren't they? Tampa's just, they know how to win. They know how to win.
By the way, another example.
Goaltender interference. Dude, were you watching it?
Bad call.
What were they saying on the broadcast? Yep. This is definitely not going to count. Not going to count. This is not going to count. Goal is good. And there we go. This is what I've been saying all season. We're right back to square one.
Huge play in the game. A huge play in the game. And they got it wrong. Either they got it wrong or everything they've explained to me doesn't make sense. Or is just they're explaining it to me wrong. How often have we talked about when the goalie is in the blue ice, you can't touch him? Incidental contact, even if it's not that much, is interference. This one was clear cut to me. Either the refs, when they went and looked at those little iPads, they just were not pointed out the contact that we all saw. But the screener in front of the net, he clipped Sergei Bobrovsky in the helmet. Not huge, but he bumped him. He bumped him in the mask. And his head went just for a second to the right. And at the same time, as he's coming through with his skates in the blue ice, clear as day, he hit the stick of Bobrovsky and moved the stick away from his body. Very subtle. But he's in the blue ice. They all saw it. Every announcer and Don Koharski, the guy in the thing.
Not going to count.
What do they have him there for? Does he not know the rules? I mean, he's on TV, puts
that
his neck on the line.
Point.
He's saying what we all have been taught. What are they looking at?
How did we get to this point again? But we're back to square one.
See,
how did we get to this point?
I think they had
improvements.
I don't know. I don't think they're on their toes up there or something. That just did not make sense.
There's literally no one. That's why I was laughing. I was laughing because I've made a big to-do all season every time I tweet out, this is going to count or this isn't going to count. But every time I follow with, but it's 50-50. Who knows? Flip a coin, throw a dart. Who knows? And everybody's like, well, how can you, this is definitely not going to count. People come back at me on Twitter. I'm like, really? You know? Watch. This is what it's been all year long. Last night, I'm laughing. The announcers, this is not going to count. Don Karski, this is not going to count. We have a good goal. And I just started laughing out loud, like, yep, there we go.
Get it. Now, there are some that are 50-50 and are very debatable. Did the guy push him in? Did he not push him in? All of that. Sometimes this is going to be what you have to live with replay. Sometimes it is 50-50. That was one that was not. So when you say, hey, I have no idea what it is, if you follow what the guidelines are, there should be some, like last night, that are clear cut, even though they are not an egregious bang into the goalie clear cut for everybody to see. That one was, the goalie was not allowed to play his position. He got bumped in the head. He had the stick taken to the right. He could not make the save. He did not have a chance to make the save the way he should have. He may not have saved it. That was a great screen, and the puck went flying. He never saw the shot.
Never saw it.
But he was bumped.
Mm-hmm.
That's interference. That was. Think about it. If you're Andrew Burnett, you're the coach of Florida. We're going down the stretch of the third period. The score is 2-1. You're right in the game. Mm-hmm. Shots are about even. Tampa is in this thing again where they're just figuring out a way to compete. They've got the goalie. They got a goal from the fourth line off a face-off play, a broken play where they scored. They got the lead. Florida had a goal called off because of the puck went up into the netting or whatever. So you challenge. So now, instead of the score staying 2-1 with 5 minutes to go, you're at home. You can pull the goal. You got all kinds of momentum you can push to try to tie the game up. Now you're down 3-1, and you go on the penalty kill again. And what happens? Tampa scores, and it's game over.
And you knew it. And
lights out.
I knew it, too. I was like,
they're going to score.
Power play goal, game is over.
Come on. That was baffling to me. Like, you really, you got, like at this stage, we've had this for years. This isn't the first year of this.
Again.
They've been working on this for years. That's why I think they've regressed.
They're, what do you think I've been saying all year?
I really felt like they had a good handle on it for a while. They was improving. They were refining it, as you should every year.
The fact that it's so bad, again, they changed the outcome of that game.
That was
possibly.
And look, I don't care what.
They made the game over. How about that? Like, I don't know if Florida ties it. Yeah. They ended the game. The game is over. Once they made that decision, the game is over.
Yes.
I don't understand
it. I don't care who wins at all between Tampa and Florida. That's really frustrating to me. I think every coach has got to be sitting there going, what the heck are we supposed to do on this? There's a lot riding on a challenge when you have to pay a penalty if you don't get it right. But that... everything you've been taught, these video guys, I'm telling you, I've talked to the Nashville guys a lot. They work so hard. They study every one of those. They had to be pulling their hair out last night watching that. I'd love to talk. I should reach out to them today and say, what did you think of that?
How would you like to talk to Florida's video department?
I'll bet you they're
What do you think they would say?
I'll bet you they're getting some sympathetic texts from some of their comrades from other teams going, jeez, we would have challenged that. It happened in the game with the Predators and the Avalanche. Now, you know, that was in the second period. I don't think you can go back and say, hey, you know, that had gone the Predators' way. They would have won the series. I don't think you go there. It didn't come down to that.
Josh,
but that was one where they would have challenged every time. 10 times
again,
out of 10.
Every time. As we've talked about the Predators situations, you would challenge it every time. Out in Lebanon, Josh texts in on our text line. So the league wants scoring up. That has something to do with it, but they also want the refs' call on the ice to stand. If they override everything, then what's the point of the officials? If it's minor, they seem to let it stand. That may be true. What is the point of all of this if that's how you're going to play? If you have the video evidence and everybody can see it, and I feel like most, I don't want to say everybody, 9 out of 10 would say, yep, that's interference. It's not going to count. Then what are we doing here? How could that be possible? How can we all go, yeah, that's not going to count, but yet they want scoring up, so they're like, yeah, let it count. I don't believe that.
It's like Mike Vrabel says this all the time in football when he has the refs there. Teach us the rules. Teach us how you want us to teach our players. Because that's what we're going to do. We're going to teach our players what you tell us. If you tell this is a penalty, I'll tell my players you can't do this because it's a penalty. The taunting, whatever the rules, the points of emphasis are in a particular year, that's what he says every time, right? Tell us what the rules are, what you're going to call, and then I'll go teach my guys. This is what's happening with the goaltender interference. They have set forth a list of things to go down on every goaltender interference. Is it in the blue paint? Is it incidental? Was a guy pushed in? All of these things on a checklist. You've taught this. This is now, I don't know how many years, 5, 6, 7 years at least, maybe more, that you've had goaltender interference. That followed the checklist. So you can't just come back with, well, we want scoring up or you know, whatever it is. Those guys have all been trained. You challenge when X, Y, Z happens. That was a classic one, even though it was subtle contact.
Ben on our text line says, I can't speak for the regular season, but I'm fine with them letting more stuff go in the postseason.
No, you don't change it. No.
How do you let it go? It's the wrong call.
That's wrong.
Why would you let it go? It
especially
make any
when
sense.
You get penalized if you're wrong. You challenge the when you know you're right.
The game is over with that decision. It's over. Like, you ended the game with that decision.
Yes.
And it was the wrong decision. And you ended the game. I don't know if Florida ties it up, but don't they deserve the chance? Don't they deserve for the goal not to be counted? And it's a one-goal game with, I don't remember the time at that
point.
It's
like 5 minutes left.
I was going to say 6 minutes left in
maybe
the game.
Maybe a little under five? I can't remember. Exactly.
But once you made that call, and I just started laughing. I'm like, okay, one, typical. Two, game over. Thanks for playing. And I was like, and Tampa's going to score a power play goal. Watch. And it was so predictable. So predictable.
Ed Olczyk right away goes, watch the head of the goalie. You see it right there. Then there's the stick with the skate. Don Kaharski comes on and says, this is tricky, but I think it's interference. I mean, they all, as a consensus, as they're watching, along with all of us, they thought it hit the textbook definition of goaltender interference. And then here comes Kelly Sutherland. There was no goaltender interference. What?
We've got a good goal.
We got a good goal. What?
All right, come back. Wrap up the second hour next. Mike Golic Jr. coming up at high noon. Talk a little football with him. Also, I have a subject about Derrick Henry, the King.
Oh, yes.
In the third hour as well. Richard Deitch at 1 o'clock. A lot more coming here on this Wednesday on the DDC.
Now, we talked about the goaltender interference. Tampa wins. The other game last night I thought was pretty telling. Now, you may have seen the final score, Colorado-St. Louis, and said, ooh, great game one. And it was. Very dramatic. But if you watch the game, you had to come away once again impressed with the firepower of Colorado. St. Louis was hanging on to stay in the game.
Bennington
kept was them in fabulous.
The game. Kept them in the game.
There were a lot of reminders of game two of the Predator series, right?
Yep.
You had a phenomenal performance on the road by a goalie to keep his team in it. I think Colorado hit the post five times. They had 54 shots, which is even more than they had against the Predators in game two. And they win it 3-2. A great goal by Jordan Kyrou and a bad line change. And it was kind of a soft goal given up by Kemper. Got the game to overtime, but St. Louis has to be going back to the drawing board saying, wow, they were a little rusty. We were rested, feeling good, and man, they hit us with a sledgehammer, and we were fortunate to get to overtime. I'm really curious to see what adjustments the Blues can make. Can they look better, especially when the series goes back to St. Louis? I think they'll have some better matchups there, but that was an impressive performance by Colorado. If they can sharpen up a little bit and finish more, whew, they look like the juggernaut. Now, they swept St. Louis last year, if you remember. They won their first six playoff games and then hit the wall. Lost four in a row to Vegas in the second round. So there's still some mental baggage for Colorado. But I thought that was interesting. And from the perspective of a Predators follower, you're probably saying to yourself, okay, does that make you feel any better about just how good Colorado is? If Colorado keeps looking like this, does that add a little perspective and soften the blow at all about how lopsided the series was against the Abs? Are they just that good?
It's now, a great question.
It's only one game. Game two could be completely different.
It's to each his own. I mean, some people will take solace in that, right? Some will be like, don't care. I don't care what. Some will. Some will be like, yeah, lost to the best team. But every fan is different, right? And how they feel about that. We've had that topic before. Do you go on and root for the team to put your team out, right? Or do you root against them? How does that work? So we've played that topic over the years. So it just falls into the category of to each his own. I still don't believe it's going to be easy. I said yesterday when making the prediction, I said yesterday and Monday, I think Colorado's going to win the series. I think this is the year. They know it's the year. And they're going to do it just because simply they're that talented. But the Blues are still not going to go away quietly. They're not. This is not going to be easy. I get it. What you said was spot on. If you just saw the score, you're like, oh, it was an overtime game. I was back and forth. Great, you know, great game. That's a good way of putting it. St. Louis was hanging on for dear life, like the Predators in game two. It's a great parallel. That's exactly what it was. Bennington, Connor Ingram, both goaltenders just kept their team in the game. But you just knew, what were they outshot, like 13-0 in overtime? What was the numbers? I don't think St. Louis recorded a shot. Look that up. I think it was 13-0, or I'm just completely making this up.
They
were dominated.
Let's look at the second period. Colorado had 40 shot attempts in the second period alone.
Just say that out loud again.
40 shot attempts.
Shots in one period.
And not on goal, but 40 shot attempts total. Now that, you got to have the puck a lot to have that many shot attempts. That is an absurd amount. There are games, and Brendan Burke pointed this out on the broadcast last night. St. Louis is a pretty good defensive team. There were some games where they didn't allow 40 shot attempts for the game. Colorado got 40 in the second period. It's just hard to harness that team. It's hard to defend that team. They're that good, especially right now they have everybody, right? If you're up in Colorado, you're saying knock on wood because, like, Braden Point is out right now for Tampa. This is what starts happening over the journey. That's why it's so hard to win. You could all of a sudden lose one or two key guys, and you're not quite as strong. But while Colorado has all the horses, it's tough to contain all those guys. They got stallions everywhere. Those guys fly.
Pretty darn good. Heidi from Dixon on our text line says, maybe that's why scoring is up across the league. They let goalie interference happen. Yeah. There's some truth to that.
Joe and Robbie were kicking around. They were sort of, why is scoring up? Because it's a little tighter in the playoffs. You're not seeing as many, you know, 5-4 games. You are seeing some, and you're seeing some blowouts. But I do think the caliber, the number of ace goalies is a little bit down from where it was before. They are calling more. I think the players are in the habit of knowing that they can't hook, they can't cross-check to contain great players like McKinnon and McDavid and guys like that. Those players are allowed to do their thing, which is how it should be. That's what the NBA came to the conclusion of years ago when all the hooking and grabbing and hand-checking was being let go. They were like, look.
Let your stars be stars.
We want to let the stars do their thing. So I do think the game is there. That's why hockey is scoring more. And I think there are a lot more defensemen like Cale Makar and Roman Josi. Not quite as good as them, but there's more teams that have defensemen that are more creative passers up in the play. They're not just the big dudes that stay back and never jump into the rush. You have more all-around defensemen that are activating offense and creating offense. I think that's, if I had to put my finger on why the scoring is up, I think a lot of those factors have all come together.
We'll start hour number three with Mike Golic Jr. We'll do that next.